Today I want to talk to you about some pure culture work, Pseudomonas interacting with metal and metalloid nanoparticles. And really this is the work of Allison Horst, who's in the audience. She's a beginning PhD student. She has a poster after this session. I encourage you to go and look at her work, because I'm only going to have one slide touching on her work so she can tell you more about it in person at her poster. Also, Andrea Neal, postdoc in my group, and John Priester, postgraduate researcher. Certainly, yeah. Is that better? Okay. John Priester, postgraduate researcher in my group. And really, it's John's story I'm going to begin with. It's the longer story, the more well-developed at this point. So if I had known what Ron was going to say about the fullerenes, I might have argued something different in this slide. But in fact, our assumption is that at the microscale, considering the different growth habits of bacteria at the microscale, in the sense of soil pores, organo-mineral complexes, et cetera, water films, you'll have microbes that are in extracellular polymeric substances, bridging organo-mineral complexes. You'll have planktonic microbes, microbes at the air-water interface, and that these little red, as depicted here, nanoparticles, either aggregated or dispersed, will somehow encounter the microbes. Now, if I listened to Ron first, I might have done something a little bit different and had him go the opposite direction. But this is our assumption in entering this work. So we're not interested necessarily. We are interested, but the subject of our work at this time is not looking at long-range transport or even transport mechanisms between soil pores, organic matter, et cetera, but really just to look at assuming that bacteria will encounter nanoparticles or vice versa, what are the bidirectional effects. So similarly to what Ron just mentioned in terms of their interest in looking in soil, we're interested in what are the effects of metal and metalloid engineered nanoparticles. So these are synthetic nanoparticles on bacteria. We're looking at both planktonic and surface-associated growth modes. And we're looking at the constituent metals, the nanoparticles, and the aggregates. And in the case of the constituent metals, this to us is particularly important because some of these nanoparticles are made of toxic metals. The first story I'll show you is about that, in fact. And it could be that it's the constituent metals that are causing the effect and not the nanoparticles themselves. So it's important to look at that in parallel. And then how do the bacteria change the nanoparticles? So I have three stories. The longer one is this one about cadmium selenide quantum dots. We heard a little bit about quantum dots earlier today. These are semiconductor nanocrystals. In general, they're very useful, very promising for labeling in a biomedical context or even in an environmental microbiology context, because their size is specifically related to the emission spectra. And so you can triple label samples or multiply label samples just using different nanoparticle sizes. In this work, we're not working with the very bright particles that are coated with a zinc sulfide cap. We're working with bare quantum dots. We intentionally did this because we wanted to understand what might happen in the environment once the cap is eroded, assuming that the cap would be labile to a certain extent. What then happens to the bare cadmium selenide nanoparticle? However, these particles are synthesized in the lab of my collaborator Galen Stuckey in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at UCSB with a citrate cap. The citrate is what enables these particles to stay dispersed in aqueous media, which is an important dimension of studying the particles and their effects on the organisms. Most of the culture conditions that we're using are fairly standard. We're working with rich media. Part of the reason for doing that is because we want to provide the organisms with their best chance, already knowing that they're going to perform well in rich media in the absence of particles. We want to provide them with their best chance for rapid growth. And also, in some cases, the nanoparticles that we're working with readily absorb nutrients from the media. And so we might automatically be imposing a nutrient limitation in some cases, which would constitute a differential growth condition when we're trying to compare our results across different types of nanoparticles. These are 5-nanometer nanoparticles that are being synthesized. We always dialyze them before work. We know, before working with them, we know that they're stabilized in solution during the course of the experimentation. That is, they're not dissolving extensively, and they do not dissolve or break down in the media over the course of experimentation. However, if we synthesize them, as we heard earlier today, if we synthesize them and leave them on the bench in the dark for a long time, they'll dissolve. And so we typically work with fresh materials and then dialyze them to remove free cadmium at the beginning of the experiment so that we don't have any free cadmium at the get-go. We monitor growth. So this work is about physiology. We're interested in bacterial physiology in response to the particles. We're also looking at morphology. We look at the distribution of the metals and the oxidation state using selenium as a tracer for the stability of the particle. So the first thing is we look at cadmium toxicity to the bacteria. And the first thing we learn is that these bacteria are actually fairly resistant to cadmium, which also makes it nice because we can work with higher concentrations of these metals. It's easier to measure differences in high concentrations than differences in really low concentrations. And what we see is that the 75 milligram per liter of the ranges of concentrations that we looked at is where we start to see toxicity to the bacteria as they're growing in liquid culture. So this is from a planktonic culture where optical density is our proxy for biomass over time. So we start to see toxicity at 75 milligrams per liter. And so I've circled 75 milligrams per liter on this chart. This is basically, so bacterial growth is a first-order process. And so of interest in performing toxicity studies, oftentimes when you're focusing on physiology, is the growth rate constant, which is called specific growth rate. And so when we measure the specific growth rate as a function of cadmium concentrations across a range of concentrations, whether the bacteria are grown in liquid culture, so they're in a planktonic growth mode, or they're growing on a membrane, so they're sort of starting to assume a biofilm growth mode, or whether they're fed cadmium selenide quantum dots, or fed cadmium in the form of cadmium acetate at equivalent cadmium concentrations. What we find is that all of these treatments basically fall sort of on the same kind of power function with respect to cadmium concentration. And in particular at 75 milligrams per liter, where we've tested all of these different combinations, there's no significant difference between these treatments. So the impression that we get is that growth is inhibited by cadmium selenide quantum dots quantitatively similarly to cadmium delivered as cadmium acetate. So the bacteria are experiencing cadmium toxicity when they're fed quantum dots. So then what happens to the cadmium? So initially, the bacteria are fed particulate cadmium in the form of a nanoparticle or cadmium in the form of a salt. And whether they're fed cadmium in the form of a salt or in the form of a nanoparticle, the same quantity of cadmium enters the cells. Now, I've drawn this as a test tube with a little pellet at the bottom because we have one additional experiment to perform to try and make sure that we know how cadmium is complex to extracellular proteins versus cells. But a key part of the information on this graph is that the yield, that is the numbers of cells, the total amount of biomass cultivated for these two treatments, whether cadmium is delivered in the form of quantum dots or cadmium salt, is exactly the same. So the cells are growing to the same extent. They're also inhibiting their growth rate to the same extent. They're also accumulating cadmium inside the cells, i.e. inside the pellet, to the same extent. So again, what we're seeing is that cadmium appears to be affecting the cells just like the quantum dots and vice versa. On the other hand, if we separate the cells from the quantum dots with a dialysis membrane, we see no cadmium uptake into the cells whatsoever and no loss of cadmium through the dialysis membrane. If there was loss, it would enter the cells. Seeing sort of rather similar situation with the membrane, although it turns out that there's slightly less uptake of cadmium in the form of quantum dots when cells are grown on a membrane as a surface-associated culture as compared to the salts. And we have yet to explain this. We're still investigating this outcome. When we look at a TEM image of the cells and perform energy dispersive spectroscopy, we see that there's cadmium and there's selenium sort of co-localized within the cell. What we don't know, and we're using a different type of technology in the near future to determine whether or not we have intact quantum dots in the cell. We don't know this yet. We'll be using electron diffraction to make that determination, because XRD is not sensitive enough for making that particular determination. So we know that we have both cadmium and selenium inside the cell, and so then we use the oxidation state of selenium to try and understand whether or not the material is broken down inside the cell. And what we find, we do this in conjunction with Sam Webb at SSRL, the Stanford Synchrotron Radiation Lab, and what we find, I just have three of the curves here because we had other types of treatments, but the standard is this red dotted line for cadmium selenide quantum dot standard. The black line here is the spectra for elemental selenium, and the blue line is our sample. It's the biological material having been exposed to cadmium selenide quantum dots. Our interpretation, i.e. Sam's interpretation of this, is that the spectra is shifted clearly to be more closely aligned with elemental selenium, implying that the selenium inside the cell has been oxidized. It's not in the form of oxidation state of minus two anymore. It's in the elemental selenium oxidation state, meaning that the quantum dots are probably not intact inside the cell. So the summary for this part of my talk is that in particular with cadmium selenide quantum dots and Pseudomonas aeruginosa, the toxicity appears to be just like cadmium when the cells are delivered cadmium selenide quantum dots. The question is, are the toxicity mechanisms similar? So there's a correlation, but we don't know if the mechanisms are similar or not. It appears that the quantum dots are breaking down in culture. This is interesting because it's possible that microbes could be activating this type of, there's a toxicological concept called activation. If this is sort of something that's very general, it's possible that the microbes are activating these types of nanoparticles and making them more toxic by solubilizing them in general. So the cells accumulate cadmium and selenium and the oxidation state changes, and that's our firmest evidence at this point for the fact that there's breakdown. But we still have some very important questions. Do the quantum dots enter cells intact, or are they entering as the constituents, cadmium and selenide, is there extracellular breakdown, or is this breakdown occurring on or inside the cells? And these are issues yet to be determined. We have two other early phase projects that I'll tell you briefly about. This is in partnership with industry, looking at a series of metal and metal oxide nanoparticles that are produced for various industrial purposes. This is from one particular company. They manufacture lithium carbonate, zirconium stabilized yttrium, titanium dioxide, and lithium titanate, lanthanum carbonate, and titanium dioxide. And as you see here, I have the specific surface area by BET analysis, but not the particle size. The particle size is by TEM, and I'm not showing the TEMs either just for various reasons, mostly related to the fact that these are from an industry that is asking us to perform this work, and we're carefully navigating how we show the results so far. But I'm showing the specific surface area, and that tells us one sort of piece of information about the particles and perhaps implies automatically that they're highly prone to aggregation. I don't have the particle sizes listed here because, in fact, the primary particle size is all below 100 nanometers, but there's quite a range of particle sizes, so this is an issue in working with industrial nanoparticles. Those that we are not synthesizing in the lab, they tend to be quite heterogeneous in terms of their particle size distribution. And so making crisp conclusions about toxicity relationships to organisms is going to be kind of a challenge in working with these real industrial materials. What I wanted to tell you from this work so far, because I think it's actually very compelling, is that the first thing is that when we take these nanoparticles and we put them into the same rich media in which we've studied cadmium selenide quantum dot breakdown and toxicity, immediately these particles are aggregating into much larger structures. So there's this sort of sense in microbiology that, and it's sort of part of the discussion, there certainly isn't a paradigm yet, but that the aggregated particles will not be as toxic if the primary particles are toxic to the bacteria, or the aggregated particles will have less of an effect. And in fact, well, what we're seeing so far with this work is that the bacteria, interestingly, readily colonize these aggregates. The colonization pattern, so the colonization that I'm showing on the right-hand side, these are the uncolonized aggregated particles, and then these are the colonized aggregates on the right-hand column. This is after 8 hours of growth. We've monitored the degree of colonization up through exponential phase of the control culture, that is the culture without the nanoparticles. And we see that there's different degrees of colonization. It's almost as though the bacteria are colonizing and then they're coming back off. And what we see at relative to the control was that there are different degrees of effects on the percentage of live and dead cells in the culture. And so this is one way of being able to say, are we seeing effects on the growth or the death rates in comparison to the control? The lithium carbonate essentially seems to be having no effect on the bacteria in culture. The yttrium stabilizer Konia, on the other hand, seems to have an effect both on the number of dead cells and on the number of live cells. So there's an enhancement of growth, but also a much more pronounced enhancement in the number of dead cells that are accumulating after an eight-hour period relative to the control. The titanium dioxide seems to be inhibitory even in this aggregated state, and this is photocatalytic titanium dioxide, by the way, but all of this has been done in the dark. But the titanium dioxide, and this is also annotase. It's not a mixture of rutile and annotase. It's according to our XRD and also the manufacturer, it's annotase. Seems to be inhibitory to a great degree, even though it's aggregated, and the lithium titanate also seems to be favoring growth or seems to be stimulating growth, but also inhibitory to the death of the organisms. So the point is that we see an interaction, a visual interaction of the bacteria with all of these aggregated states of these industrial nanoparticles, and we see a variety of effects. And it's not as though we are not seeing effects, and that's the main point here, is that the aggregates are affecting the bacteria. The third story, and this is Allison's work, and she has a much more elaborated story about this work on her poster. I encourage you to go and see it. This has to do with flame pyrolysis synthesized titania. These are made by our collaborators at UCLA. So these are very pure titania particles. That is in the sense that we know that exactly how they're made. We've seen them produced in the laboratory. They're impinged in nanopure water at the time that they're produced in the flame. So they're relatively free of any other impurities. They're a mixture of annotase and rutile. Allison has been looking at different sizes of the primary particles and trying to understand whether or not there's an effect of primary particle size on Pseudomonas putida. Again, with the titanium dioxide, these particles are rapidly aggregating under the conditions of growth before we've inoculated the bacteria. So both for the 7.4 nanometer particle and the 16 nanometer particle. Interestingly, however, the 7.4 nanometer particles seem to have a measurable toxic effect, even though, again, they're highly aggregated at the initiation of the experiment. And this effect is observable through the sort of dose-response dependency that we see across these two different concentrations. Now, of course, one could express this in terms of surface area and not in terms of mass concentration, and that indeed may be the more appropriate way to express it. But these are all very uniform particles. Higher surface area, higher mass, we need to test this over a larger concentration range. But the implication from here is that the smaller particles, we can infer their toxicity by seeing this dose dependency. And also, they seem to be toxic despite the fact that they're aggregated at the initiation of the experiment. So in summary, Pseudomonas, these two different species that we're working with, they seem to be responding to the nanoparticles, whether they're dispersed or aggregated, different types of nanoparticles. They have a heavy metal in the case of cadmium selenide quantum dots, accounts for toxicity, but we don't know if the mechanisms are equivalent. The aggregates are readily colonized, but they also are inhibitory. And the nanoparticle size does seem to matter. We recognize that it's important to be comparing apples to apples in terms of crystal structure, but we can see with these two particles that have the similar crystal structure that there does seem to be a dose-dependent relationship for the smaller particles. And I acknowledge EPA and DOE for funding. Also, I've left it off here, the UC Toxic Substances Research and Teaching Program, the joint between UCLA and UC Santa Barbara with the lead campus in nanotoxicology. And my collaborators are as shown here on this list. Thank you.